Turn up the radio and sing along. It's time for another great song. This is the Great Song Podcast.
Season's greetings and welcome once again to the Great Song Podcast. I'm Rob Allen.
I am JD Mosier.
Did you say JD?
I said JP.
Did you? All right.
I am JP Mosier.
And we're here to celebrate.
This is JP Mosier.
Joseph Preston Mosier on the mic.
Jelton Peavis Mosier.
We're here to celebrate the greatest songs in modern music history. We're going to tell you what makes them great, why we think they're awesome, and why you should too. JD, how you doing today, man?
Man, I am doing fantastic, Rob. Okay, so the song we're covering today was made popular in two films. Could have gone with Rad, the bicycle movie with Lori Loughlin. Probably the more popular of the two. I don't know, maybe it's arguable. But the one we chose to cover is arguably the greatest video game movie ever made, at least in my mind.
Wow,
I can't think of a better one.
I mean,
from the 1989 movie The Wizard, starring Fred Savage, Jenny Lewis, and Christian Slater, little Beau Bridges action thrown in. We can talk about what song we're talking about, but I definitely want to go a video game Nintendo episode heavy on this.
Okay.
But Rob, tell me about what song we're talking about, and then I'm going to pitch an idea for you.
All right. This is Send Me an Angel by Real Life from the movie The Wizard.
That's a great cutoff there. Nice job. And make sure you hang around to the end because we're hanging out with David Sterry, lead singer of Real Life. It's going to be a lot of fun. And I'm going to pitch this idea to Rob. Between sections, I want us to pause and go play a regular Nintendo game. So I have in my house a video game system that has every regular Nintendo game.
Yeah.
So we're going to table.
It's amazing. He's underselling it. It's a huge, it's a custom cabinet with literally every, like,
it's every regular Nintendo,
game,
every Super Nintendo, every Sega Genesis, PlayStation.
It's amazing.
Capital 2. But anyway, so we're going to pause for 30 seconds and come back and tell you what game we played and
how
we did. Here we go.
Let's
go pick one. All right. Well, we're back. That was exciting. Me and Rob chose Jordan versus Bird, 3-point shootout.
Yeah.
And Rob put the hurting on me.
I did.
As Larry Legend, shooting up those, draining those trays.
12-7.
12-7. Wasn't even a ball game.
Bird defeats Bird.
Bird against Bird, because only Bird plays Bird.
That's
and
right.
Bird. So, yeah.
Bird is the word.
Bring us back in.
Okay, so Send Me an Angel, the version we actually listened to, this song has been released twice and lived two very full lives and been a hit both times. It was released originally in 1983 by the band Real Life on their album Heartland. It went to number 29 on the Billboard Hot 100 in the U.S. and number 22 on the U.S. Cashbox Top 100. Number 18 in Canada, it went number 1 in New Zealand and West Germany, number 2 in somewhere else. I think it's supposed to be Switzerland. I think I just wrote New Zealand again, but I think it's Switzerland. And number 6 in Australia. The 1989 version, which is the version that we listened to and the version that is in The Wizard, went to number 26 on the Hot 100. So actually charted a little higher in the U.S., number 20 on the Cashbox, number 3 on the Billboard Hot Dance charts, and number 5 on the Billboard Club Play charts. So a legit hit both times. Same song, just a different mix, a little more, maybe a little more aggressive in the 1989 version. I guess, should we play the 83 version?
Play them.
Let's do this. This, by the way, not to be confused with Calling All Angels, How Do You Talk to an Angel, Angel by Aerosmith.
Shaggy Angel.
Here's the original. They're both cool. Do you believe in heaven above? Do you believe in love? But just a little different mix. Let me get it further into it. It's hard to be lucky in love. I'll tell you one thing that really stands out in this version. We'll hear it here. Hear the sound. That clap sound on the previous version is really clappy. It's almost too much. It's really hot in the mix.
Yeah,
it reminds me of can't remember what it's called even from my percussion days in high school. But there's this big piece of two pieces of wood on a swivel kind of thing on a, what do you call it?
I remember that. And you hit those together.
You hit them together and it makes just the biggest, most obnoxious sound. And they always use it at Christmas time when they're singing, there's a birthday party at the home of Bill Gray, right?
See, I would have picked Pass Around the Coffee and the Pump.
Yes, I just couldn't think of whatever the lyric was. But on Sleigh Ride, right? But it's what all the percussion kids wanted to play. Like, give me the freaking wood block. Because it was literally just hit it as hard as you want, dude.
That's right. That's great.
So that was always big fun in the Christmas thing. But in the 89 version, that is a different sound. It's like a synthy sound, and it's a little bit more back in the mix, and it's a little easier to stomach. That's too much. It's big in there. I'll tell you something else about this song. Let me get back in the verse here, and I'll go to the I'll go back to the 89 version. Okay, here we go. You could easily mistake the first verse of this for a Michael W. Smith song. Right?
Yeah.
Especially the pre-chorus melody, I feel like. This right. Oh, that's the
second part.
That's
the
radio edit, so it's structured a little differently.
You girl, you don't have to be picture perfect.
Okay, I tell you something else that jumped out to me on this is there's a melody thing here where he jumps an octave plus a minor third.
Okay.
For absolutely no reason.
Okay.
Not necessary at all. Uh-huh. It's like, why did you do that? That's hard. And it's not even a high thing. It's from low to mid-range.
To middle. Okay.
So let's listen real close here.
Open fire on my burning heart.
Right. On my burning heart. That's an octave and a flat third. When it's like, why? You know, like, not necessary at all.
He didn't need to do the on my that low.
Yeah.
He
open fire on my burning heart. He could have just kept that same note. You know what I mean? Maybe. Yeah. But so, open fire, drop an octave on my burning heart. It's a really interesting choice to make. It's something I would have never done. It's cool.
Yeah.
When I heard it, I was like, whoa, why do you do that? You
know? That's good. Good ear.
Very interesting.
I got some stuff on the movie real quick.
Okay.
Let's take a quick break and talk about the movie.
The Wizard.
Oh, well, since I said take a break, do you want to play another game?
Sure.
Let's go play something real quick. All right. So we're back. We played a game that neither of us had played against each other because we're trying to do head-to-head games. We played Karate Kid, and I got the fortunate chance to be Daniel-san, and I win. I won with a kick to the jejunum or whatever. I don't know. I won that one. So we're even 1-1.
I lost. I was midair and you kicked me right in the crotch.
Yeah. So it was, I crane kicked, but not really the crane kick.
Yeah.
That's all right. Get him a body bag. Another movie reference. Okay. So the movie, I watched it last night just to get ready for this. It's been a while since I've seen it, but basic premise. Little kid, Jimmy Woods, he suffers from some PTSD after his twin sister drowns. Troubled child, runs away to keep up with his half-brother, who's played by Fred Savage. They go to Reno. They enter this video game contest. So many facts about how they find out he's good at these video games, but whatever. Watch the movie and you can figure that out. Tobey Maguire, Rob mentioned in there, has got this he's an uncredited extra. He's got this awful little kid mullet, and he just stands there. It's hilarious. So Jimmy makes it to the finals. They unveil a new game, which happens to be Mario 3.
Yeah.
And somehow Fred Savage's character, Corey, and Jenny Lewis, the character Haley, they know about warp zones and how the game works and everything, even though it's a brand new game. They're like, find the warp zone, use the whistle, and it's this brand new game. So the concept, it's basically an ad for Nintendo.
Essentially, yes.
The whole movie is
for
basically,
Universal Studios and Nintendo.
For Universal Studios and Nintendo, they go to the King Kong thing and everything. Yeah. Nintendo Power, they talk about it in there. Mm-hmm. And the Power Glove.
The Power Glove.
Dude, the Power Glove. Now, this song is sandwiched between You Got It, The Right Stuff by New Kids on the Block.
Yep.
And Hangin' Tough by New Kids on the Block.
Yep.
Two of Rob's favorites.
I gotta say, I'm an unabashed old school New Kids on the Block fan, and I don't mind. I was going to point out actually some of the other music on this
from
this
movie
because the soundtrack is so varied.
Yeah,
it goes from New Kids on the Block to Real Life to Martha and the Vandellas to Paul Carrick.
Yeah,
Paul Carrick is on there.
Former guest of the Great Song Podcast.
That's right,
friend of the show.
Bobby Brown, Paul Anka.
Yeah,
and then Patsy Cline and the Bodines.
So the girl on there that does the last song, could you have the soundtrack pulled
is
up there?
Sally Dworsky?
Yeah. So that girl ended up being the voice of Nala in The Lion King.
Oh, no kidding. Yeah, in the original.
She's the adult voice of Nala in The Lion King.
Okay.
The adult Nala.
Wow.
And she did some other things.
I need to be clear about what you just said. He's not talking about the adult version of The Lion King.
No.
Don't go looking for the adult version of The Lion King.
No.
I don't even know that that's out there, but I'm 100% sure it is. You know what I mean? That's not what we're discussing here.
You don't want to see Scar in
that. And you don't want to hear the music from it.
Anyway, great movie. I love the movie. It got a 29 on Rotten Tomatoes. It's actually not that great, I guess, if you're going to be critical, but I love it. I made my wife watch it with me last night, and she suffered through it, but she's like...
It's one of those...
If you grew up in the
80s...
Movie. Exactly. It's a cult movie. If you grew up in the 80s and you played video games in the 80s, like, I remember where I watched this movie for the first time.
Okay.
Like, it's heart feels for me. It's heartstrings, and it, and I remembered how cool I thought the song was when they got on the back of the guys on the motorcycles, which is where this song plays, and it's right before Fred Savage's character is drinking this green canteen that I had the exact same green canteen, and I was like, dude, this is so cool.
I'm that guy.
Yeah, Reno or bust, I'm him. anyway.
So let me throw a few facts from the movie
about
this that may bring it into some further context. Okay, first of all, here's a little bit of backstory on how and why the movie got made, okay? And this kind of blew my mind. During 1988, a shortage of ROM chips, that's like computer chips, mm-hmm. microchips, and the preparation of a version of Super Mario Brothers 2 for the West delayed several of Nintendo's game releases in North America. This is Wikipedia, by the way. The delayed products included Super Mario Brothers 3, and Zelda 2, The Adventure of Link. The delay presented Nintendo with an opportunity to promote the game in a feature film. In 1989, Tom Pollock of Universal Studios approached Nintendo of America's marketing department about a video game film. Inspired by Nintendo video game competitions, Pollock envisioned, here it is, a video game version of Tommy for younger audiences.
Okay.
This is the video game version of The Who's Tommy.
Yeah.
Which is about pinball and came out
Wizard. This is the pinball wizard of the wizard.
He's the wizard.
Oh, pinball. Yeah, yes.
So that makes this the whole thing more sense as to what is this, right? And then I read another thing literally that said the original pitch for the movie. Now, I don't know if this is true. This is from like IMDb. So I don't know if this is like something somebody just submitted as an anecdotal thing or if this is true. But it basically said the original pitch for the movie was The Karate Kid, but with video games.
Okay.
It's competition. It's the whole thing. Okay. So more stuff from The Wizard. When Lucas plays Rad Racer, the character Lucas plays Rad Racer with his power glove. He presses five keys that each play a different musical note. Can you sing it off the top of your head?
Heck no.
Okay. All right. The five sequential tones is the famous five-tone musical phrase in a major scale that the aliens in Close Encounters of the Third Kind used to communicate with the Earthlings and vice versa. Let's see. Okay, the truck that Spanky is driving.
Oh, dude, I love this fact. Okay. It's from Over the Top. Yes. It's the same truck. I noticed it. And I was like, holy cow, that's the same truck from Over the Top. Another one of my favorite movies, which I've talked with Rob about. We have to cover something from that movie.
And it still has Hawk written on the door.
Yeah, on the side of it. Yeah. If you can barely see it when he gets out to fight the guy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Let's see. During the Video Armageddon Finals, the competition finals, the last game used is Super Mario Brothers 3, and it was actually meant to be revealed in the film before the game was released. It was revealed in the film before the game was released. The movie showed the first glimpses of the game, and some people claim that it was influential in the game's success. I say that game was awesome.
Yeah.
And I still remember the first time I saw the commercial for it.
Yeah.
And how hype I got. It was a kid stands, one kid chanting Mario, uh-huh. Mario, Mario. And it backs up more and more kids, yeah. Mario. Yeah. And it's the whole world and it's got a Mario face on it. And I want to play it.
Yeah. That's the first game I ever beat.
Okay.
That was the very first one that I ever beat.
I don't know.
I beat the game at my friend Steven Bridges' house. We stayed up all night. Asterisk doesn't count because he had a game genie.
Oh.
So that's kind of, for those of you that don't know what a game genie is, you could have like unlimited lives.
Yeah.
And so that was the code that we picked. And, wow. And we stayed up all night and I beat Mario 3.
Dang.
And that was the first game I ever beat.
You're never getting in the Hall of Fame.
I know, right? Asterisk, that's my steroid.
Dang. Okay. Let's see. How about,
I do have a list.
Oh, love it.
From Nintendo Life.
Okay.
The 10 greatest games ranked by Nintendo Life of the greatest NES games.
Okay, from that system.
From that system. Okay. So this is from the original Nintendo, the original NES. This is not my opinion. This is voted on by the editors
of
Nintendo Life and their poll.
Okay.
Number 10, Ninja Gaiden 2.
Great game.
Okay. Number 9, Punch-Out, which there's two versions. Ooh. It's either Mike Tyson or other guy.
Sandman?
No, it was, I forget what it was, Mr. Wonderful or something
like
that. Maybe I'm making that up. But so Punch-Out, either version. Okay. Number 8, Mega Man 3.
Okay, fantastic game.
Number 7, DuckTales.
Okay, oh yeah.
Number 6, DuckTales 2.
Wow, never played it.
So two DuckTales.
I don't even think I knew there was one.
Number 5, Super Tecmo Bowl. Okay. Probably my favorite. Number 4, Legend of Zelda.
Uh-huh.
Number 3, Contra with the original Konami code. You remember it? Up, down, down, left, right, left, right.
B-A, start.
Oh, select. I think it's just start. I don't think it's select, start. But yeah, anyway, the Konami code, you could get 30 extra lives.
Yeah.
So that was the thing there. Number 2, Mega Man 2. And number 1, Super Mario Bros. 3 is the greatest game.
Wow, Mega Man 2, the second greatest game.
The second greatest game.
That was the first Mega Man game that I had. I had 2 and 3. And then I had several of those on the list. Punch-Out for me.
Oh, that's my favorite.
Would probably be, Super Mario 3 would probably be number 1 for me.
Okay.
Just because of everything that it was wrapped up in one thing. But then I think Punch-Out would be a close number 2 for
me. I go Mike Tyson's Punch-Out number 1, Super Tecmo Bowl number 2. That's my 1-2. Okay.
I don't think I ever played Tecmo Bowl.
Do you want to?
Crazy.
Let's pause. Here we go. Round 3.
We'll come back and meet the band or something.
Dude, so let's just say what happened here. I was like, this is my second favorite game ever. And then Rob won play. We played basically sudden death rules, kind of the overtime rules in college. And Rob goes freaking Montana to Rice for one play, one shot, one kill. So for the sake of time, it worked out great.
85 yards.
One play, one shot, one kill. So Rob's played one play of offense in Tecmo Bowl and has beat me. So there you go. So anyway, great game. Where were we going? We're going to meet the band next?
Yeah.
Let's play the jingle. Let's meet the band.
All right.
Hey, let's meet the band. It's time to meet the band. Hey, mama, let's meet the band. Let's all meet the band.
Hey! All right, we're going to meet the band that played on this track. On keys and violin, Richard Zatorski. Did music for the movie The Hooker Girl at the Heart of the Hooker with a Heart of Gold.
Okay, all
that's right. The only thing I could find by him other than real life stuff. So I don't want to tell you to go pick up The Hooker with a Heart of Gold, but he did that. On bass and no shoes in this, if you're watching the video, no shoes on this guy. Alan Johnson, he was also in a band called, I'm going to call it Exciter. It may be Exeter, but it's spelled E-X-C-I-T-E-R.
It should be Exciter.
Is that Exciter? Yeah, I'm going to go with Exciter on that. He plays an Ibanez SR-505 and a Dean ML Metal Man bass.
Love it. I have an SR-505. I love it.
There you go. Well, boom. There you go. Andre, and he's got some cool bass slides in there, really prominent in the song.
Yeah.
I like it. On drums, Danny Simic. He's now playing with a gentleman known as Dave Evans, who y'all may know as the original lead singer of AC/DC. So before Bon Scott was a guy named Dave Evans. He's in a band now called Dave Evans and the Thunder Down Under. So he is now the drummer for them.
Interesting.
So that's an interesting segue from there. So that's the band. And then David Sterry on lead vocals and lead guitar, which we will talk to at the end. So make sure you hang around for that.
That's right. Let's go a little bit more on real life. They are an Australian new wave synth pop band originally called The Wires, which I think is a cool name, actually. I like that a lot.
I do, too.
I'm surprised that nobody has sort of successfully broken through with that name. It just seems like a name that there would have been a band that you know called The Wires.
Yeah.
It's, you know, whatever. Let's see. They had a drum machine named Gloria.
Apparently.
Not called Gloria, like this is the Yamaha Gloria.
They just named
they
it
They had one that they named Gloria. Like,
Gloria!
Who was it? Oh, gosh, who was it? Oh, Sister Hazel. Like, they had a van named Cleavon.
Okay.
Right? Yeah. These guys had a drum machine named Gloria. And after hearing an early version of Send Me an Angel, the group's manager, Glenn Wheatley, was so impressed that he formed his own label, Wheatley Records, to release it as a single in early 83. The band then signed to Curb for worldwide distribution. So, smart move on the part of the manager.
Absolutely.
To go, wow. And cool of him, I assume. I don't know if things went well
We don't know how it went from them to Curb.
Right. But he saw dollar signs for everybody and made the leap and said, I believe in this song. I'm going to be the label that puts it out. So, and then they signed to Curb and got it worldwide. And then it came out again 6 years later and everybody loved it again. They're like, I love that song. Yeah, I love that. Let's see. What else we got? I got a little section here on the Power Glove. Just a few.
Yeah, talk about it.
Facts on the Power Glove. The Power Glove was originally released in 1989. Though it was an officially licensed product, Nintendo was not involved in the design or the release.
Oh, I didn't know that.
So I didn't either until...
it sucked. Did you ever use one?
I used one once in my life.
It's terrible. It's the hardest thing ever. I hated it.
It totally bombed.
Uh-huh.
But this movie made it look so cool.
Yeah.
You know?
Absolutely.
And it was like... It was one of those things that like... Your rich buddy had one.
Exactly.
And that was it.
Yep. There's the scene in it where he goes, the character Lucas, who's like, he's like, I love the Power Glove. It's so bad.
So bad. Yeah. And it was, did you see the movie that came out last year on Netflix?
With Doogie Howser in it?
Yes.
Yes. So good.
And they just talk about like, it was terrible.
It was terrible.
Like,
the whole thing. I love that movie.
Impossible to hit the buttons and the movements didn't work right.
Yeah.
And they only really made two Power Glove specific games. The rest of it, you just had to use the buttons on your arms as a controller.
Yeah.
But they made like just a couple of games that were supposed to use the motions of the glove. Mm-hmm. It was kind of revolutionary in that stuff that we're doing with like VR technology now. This was the first glimpse of.
And like the Wii, it was kind of, a precursor to that.
Yeah, maybe? Exactly. That sort of motion activated, effect on the game.
You remember the Power Pad?
The Power Pad was bad.
Was awesome with world class track meet. Did you ever? And then the way you beat it is instead of running, what you do? You get down on your hands. Yes. Just hit it real fast.
I hate it when people did that.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was great, dude. The Power Pad. Now that was fun. And that, do you remember the Wii equivalent? The board, like the Wii. What was it called? The Wii Fit board.
Okay.
There was a. It was called the Wii Fit, and there was a game went with it. You know what I mean? But it would do everything from like track your weight to like. you could do stuff on it, but they would have like Olympic games
yeah.
that would be like, okay, you would run,
and
then
jump
and then get up on the balls of your feet like you were jumping for like a ski jump.
Okay.
And so you would like get down, shift your weight, and then boom, up on your feet. And it, dude, that was cool as heck. Like that.
And the way you did the, if you really wanted a real jump in that, you just jumped off the pad and then jumped back right. on. Like, holy cow, you've been in the air forever.
That's so funny. The first thing that we look for is like, how can I cheat this?
That's right. You know?
Like, I don't want to win this Rob's the proper way.
Rob's like, I'm going to beat Montana and Rice. I'm going to tell you how to win.
Exactly. I mean, yeah, we play to win around here. Let's see. In July of 2019, a speed runner, like somebody that tries to beat games as fast as possible, and they'll stream them on Twitch, YouTube, that kind of thing. Speedrunner Grand Pooh Bear became the first and only person known to have completed Super Mario Brothers 3 using only the Power Glove.
Oh, it wow.
took okay. him two hours, 29 minutes, 43 seconds.
Okay.
Did it only with the Power Glove. Have you seen Ash versus Evil Dead?
Uh-uh.
Okay. You know what it is, though? It's like,
I don't.
Okay, really? Uh-uh. So the Evil Dead movies, Sam Raimi directed them. They starred Bruce Campbell.
Okay.
And Evil Dead 2, especially, is like classic, like
okay.
horror comedy classic.
Okay. Is it like Walking Dead stuff? Is it zombie stuff?
It's zombie type stuff, yeah. Okay. But it's also like, I don't know, there's like a Book of the Damned, and it's like, you know, just
weird stuff.
Whack stuff, but cheeky and funny,
okay.
you know? Anyway, Ash is the main character, and his prosthetic hand in Ash versus Evil Dead is built from a repurposed Power Glove.
Okay.
So that's next cool. time you guys watch Ash versus Evil Dead, you can check that out. And then my last note was about, 8-Bit Christmas, okay. which I really enjoyed. I thought that was cool.
That's good. Well, I've got to stump the genius, but before, you guys shout out what game we should play. On the count of three, yell it out. 1, 2, 3. Okay, we heard you. We're going to go play. All right, guys, we know y'all are all dying to know which game we played because yep. we heard you, and yep. we heard you say RBI Baseball.
That's right. The majority of you said RBI Baseball.
So that's what we went with, yep. And we just called it a tie. We played one inning. Rob actually got more runners on base, so I guess technically he would get the win. But congratulations.
Thank you. We'll
give him the more or less victory for now.
I think maybe I'm the wizard.
I think you are. You're Jimmy. That's awesome. Okay, guys, we're going to play Stump the Genius. So I don't know if we played the jingle yet because the back and forth of the video games, but we're going to play Stump the Genius video game themes.
Oh, wow.
So I'm going to play popular video game themes
okay.
and we're going to see how many of these Rob can get.
Okay.
And these are video game themes only from the Nintendo.
All right.
So I think you'll do okay. I think you'll know the majority of them. I picked 6 because that's a good even number.
Okay. Just,
I don't know why I landed on 6. Maybe one is an alternate. But here we go. Try to toss you a softball at the beginning. Here is number 1.
Of course, this is Super Mario.
That is
Brothers.
Super Mario Brothers. Good. Number 2 will go funny. Here.
Tetris.
Tetris. Rob yeah. killing the game. Number 3.
Oh, that's Pac-Man.
That is Pac-Man. Rob, 3 for 3. Bring out the bell. Number 4.
Duck Hunt.
Duck Hunt. Number 5.
That's Punch-Out.
That is Punch-Out
yeah,
against
that's
Glass
when you're actually
Joe.
Actually in the ring.
We're
yeah.
doing it. And here is number 6 to bring it on home. It was on the list. Can he clean sweep?
Wow. I don't think I know this.
That was Contra. That was Contra?
Wow.
Jungle Theme from Contra.
Oh, so. Wow. I have no memory of that.
Hey, great showing.
Yeah.
Great job on the video game Stump the Genius
wow,
edition.
Thank you. I just knew you were going to do Famous Angels.
Oh,
like
yeah.
either, like, Nolan Ryan,
uh-huh.
Reggie Jackson,
oh man,
or famous people named Angel.
Named Angel,
you know what
oh,
I mean?
I should have done something
Angel
like that.
Angel Hernandez.
That's right.
Famous MLB Angels.
Oh man, that would have been Mike Trout.
Mike Trout, yeah.
Dude, that would have been fun.
Tim Salmon. All the fish.
All the fish.
All the center fielder angel
fish. We talked about
fish.
How we were going to put together a baseball outfield of just fish. We got Tim Salmon, Mike Trout, and Kevin Bass coming at you.
Let's see. Okay. Do you have any other notes on song-wise?
I'm good, man.
There's a bunch of covers, mostly like dance covers. Yeah. This is a you know, revered dance track at this point.
Jenny Lewis, that plays the girl in the movie, Haley, she went on to be she's a pretty big music person now.
Yeah.
A couple songs y'all may know out there.
What's the band? What's her, she's the lead singer of a band, I think.
Maybe. Could be right. That sounds right.
I can't think.
Oh, no, she sang with the Postal Service. She's not the lead singer of them, okay. But she sings with the Postal Service.
She sings with the Postal Service.
You know, Such Great Heights, that song. She's probably a lead singer of a band, too.
Okay.
But I know she was in the Postal Service.
All right, there we go. Rilo Kiley. She's in Rilo Kiley.
All right.
So now what's coming up next is we are about to talk with David Sterry of Real Life. You're going to like him. We liked him a lot. We had a great time chatting with him in sunny Australia. So stick around for that. But first, no matter what you're doing right now, I need you to stop, okay? If you're, I don't know, I don't have a funny one this week. But no matter what you're doing, stop it right now. And if you're playing Nintendo,
you hit start right now.
That's right.
Which will pause the game.
That's right. And while you're on the pause menu, go to Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Follow at Great Song Pod on all those places. Join our Facebook group, Great Songs, and the great people who love them greatly. And if you want to go the extra mile and support the show, help us produce it, become a Patreon producer by going to patreon.com/greatsongpod. That's patreon.com/greatsongpod. And when you do that, we can say thank you by giving you things like bonus episodes, early release, behind the scenes, Patreon exclusives, anything we can think of to show our appreciation. We'll put it on Patreon for you. So do that if you want to support the show. And sincerely, wherever you're listening from, why ever you're joining us, whenever you is, we sincerely thank you for tuning in to the Great Song
Podcast.
Why,
when, where, how, to what extent.
Why ever you which, it doesn't matter to us. We just are grateful to have you. We're going to talk to David Sterry. We'll be back at the end to tuck you in.
This is the Great Song Podcast.
Ladies and gentlemen, as promised, we are here with David Sterry of Real Life. David, thank you so much for joining us today on the Great Song Podcast all the way from Australia. Thank you so much.
You're most welcome. I'm very happy to be here.
Excellent. And you sound like $1,200.
You sound like $1,239. It's amazing.
Sound great. Okay, let's start here because this is one of the really interesting things about Send Me an Angel to me is the different releases, the two different releases with different mixes and kind of a different feel. What was the decision to sort of re-release the song with a pretty different feel in 1989 after it had already been something of a breakout hit for you? What was the decision behind that process there?
Well, it was actually me hearing the remix of Blue Monday by New Order, which is one of my all-time favorite songs, you know. And, you know, a lot of songs were being remixed in the time, and there was never a fabulous remix of Send Me an Angel. And I just sort of wondered out loud to my record company, thinking, oh, you know, wouldn't it be good if we had a fabulous new mix of Send Me an Angel? And they ran with it. And, you know, it just started all over again, which was pretty amazing. But it was just off the top of my head. I thought nothing would come of it. But they took it very seriously and went, okay, let's do that. And they were so happy. Curb Records was so happy with the remix by an English guy called Nigel Wright. They said, oh, look, we're going to release this again. It's, you know, because Blue Monday had sort of become a hit again. And so they thought they could do that with Angel. And it happened.
Do you have if you were wanting to listen to one of your own songs, do you have a version that you prefer over the other? Do you if you wanted to hear it, would you go back and listen to the 83 or would you pop in the 89?
That's really hard to answer, you know. I mean, I don't often hear it. I'll tell you a quick funny story that yesterday morning I sleep in bed. I've got my iPad. The first thing I do before I get out of bed is to roll over and see what's the news, what's the weather going to be, has anyone mailed me or something. And I got onto Facebook and there's my friend, dear friend, the drummer from Flock of Seagulls is in Cancun, Mexico, this beautiful resort. They're having this thing called 80s in the Sand. And so, you know, I'm half asleep and Kevin's live on stage and he's is videoing some band, and they're playing Send Me an Angel. You know, so, and here's me in bed with my iPod in the middle of Melbourne, Australia's had the longest lockdown in the world. You know, I'm miserable. I'm not happy. And there's this band in this beautiful resort playing my song. Yeah.
That's so funny that you mentioned that. We just had Space Age Love Song by Flock of Seagulls playing right before we hit record, and we were talking about movie career opportunities with that. That's so funny. That's crazy timing.
Well, I work with them a lot. 2 years ago, I was over in the States on a big Lost 80s live tour, and I've worked with the Seagulls a lot. Kevin Rankin, the drummer, is a lovely, lovely guy, and he's always videoing things for people. You know, he always includes everybody from around the world in whatever's going on. And we had a lot of fun a couple of years ago. So if anyone's playing Send Me an Angel, Kevin's going to be live on Facebook making sure that I watch it.
That's great. Well, you mentioned like 80s synth, so, or you mentioned some 80s stuff that you're doing. I want to talk about, I'll had it way later, but since you mentioned it, the Send Me an Angel 80s Synth Essentials album. I love it so much, with Sweet Dreams, your remix of that, and Cars, and Fade to Gray. I completely forgot about that Fade to Gray song by Visage, and until I heard you do it, and it's one of those cases that now that I've heard yours so much, the original sounds like a cover to me, if that makes sense. Like, obviously, the Tainted Love, ooh, you know, the Soft Cell song and Shout, those are you doing a cover of their song. But I've listened to your version of Fade to Gray so much that it sounds like a cover to me, if that makes any kind of sense.
Oh,
great stuff. Yeah.
I mean, that's, I appreciate what you're saying, but that's sacrilege.
No, no, it's great.
I mean, yeah, but that's interesting, that album. I got an email from the head of Cleopatra Records, and that was said, David, we want you to make a cover album. You know, do Send Me an Angel and do some of your favorite other songs. And I thought, no, I can't do that. You know, I've never, you know, produced anything before myself. And, you know, home studio recording was kind of reasonably still new at that stage, but a part of me went, no, yeah, we'll do it. And so I was learning, I did it on a program called Logic.
Rob uses Logic.
So. Yeah, it's fabulous. It's a fabulous program, but I was one step ahead recording. So I was learning how to use it while recording at the same time. So if I wanted to learn how to do a vocal, I had to go into this tutorial thing that I'd bought. And so I was thinking, I'm going to be discovered. They're going to find out that I'm a fake, that I can't record, that I can't do this and can't do that. But I learned how to make records off making that record, you know, and it came out quite good. And I've made some money out of it, and people always say how much they like it. So it was all good in the end.
Yeah, good on you. We mentioned that we're going to talk a lot about Send Me an Angel is probably the one we're going to focus on. But yep. So in the original music video, after the Beast character enters on horseback, you're shown singing into a Shure SM57. Is that your mic of choice at that time, or was that predominantly just for video quality and ease of holdability? I know Steven Tyler preferred a 57 there for a while. Is that your mic of choice in the early to mid 80s?
Well, yeah, it's pretty much the main stage mic of choice. That pretty much everyone in Australia was always handed a 57. But one of our sound guys once said, no, you're more of a 58. And I don't know what the difference was, but I've got one sitting around somewhere actually that I use for recording my guitars actually. But yeah, it was always a 57, yeah, back in the day.
Yeah, some great close-ups in that. You have great teeth. Have you always had stellar dental hygiene? Your teeth are fantastic in that video.
You know, so many people, I don't think I've got great teeth, but so many people have told me that, hey, I was in an airport the other day and I looked up and they're playing music videos and there were your teeth. No. And in fact, one of my childhood friends, Dad used to call me Whale's Teeth, you know?
Whale's Teeth. All righty.
Yeah, that was he nicknamed me Here Comes Whale's Teeth, you know?
Right. So, that's really interesting.
Well, as you can tell, we're gear people. I'm a gear nut. I love it. Can you confirm, are those Simmons SDSV Toms on that? They sound great. I don't know if how much of the gear you are aficionado. And then I guess that's a Roland Jupiter 6 synth, right?
Nope. Okay. Oh, I am a gearhead.
Okay. Thank you.
So, yes. The drums were the Rolands, yes. And we pretty much got them to record the song. A lot of people were very angry at us going, a lot of music industry people going, oh, don't do that, don't use that. It's like this, it's going to sound so bad in a year or so. It's going to sound, everyone's going to hate it. But we loved them and we got them and we got the full kit. And, of course, when Angel came out, we sort of added the Simmons drums to the rest of our set. But they were the first lot of Simmons, and they had very hard shells, very hard heads on them, not shells, heads. And all the drummers that were using were getting hair fractures in their wrists. You know, they were hitting so hard. So Simmons finally put some rubber coatings on them to stop to make it still feel okay, but stop the wrist fractures. And the synth, no, it was a Jupiter 8. It's pretty much everything on the famous real life songs of Jupiter 8s. And in fact, speaking of gear, I have the baby Jupiter 8.
Oh, look at that. There Lovely. We go. Y'all can't, we're only it's audio, the so they can't rolling. See what you're holding it's, up.
I know, but that's fantastic. That is, I've got the whole series. I've got the Juno 6, the Jupiter 8, the JX3P, and the SH101, because we had all of those back in the day. So I've got the mini versions that sound fantastic.
That's awesome.
That's excellent. Who were, as you were crafting the sound and the style of real life, who were you listening to? Not that you were trying to imitate anybody, just who was inspirational to you as you're, you know, crafting your own thing as a band.
I guess the biggest record at the time was the one that just everybody was in love with was Dare by Human League. You know, that was the biggest thing about the new wave sound with the synthesizers. And of course you mentioned Fade to Grey before with Visage, Ultravox.
Ah, oh, dude.
Of course,
yeah.
In the mid, you know, so it was all, yeah, definitely those things. Ultravox, Human League, XTC, but yeah, more, a band called Magazine actually were very influential as well.
So as an Australian band in the early 80s, how hard was it to get exposure, say, in the United States or even in the UK? It's not the same now where you can just send somebody an MP3. You know, what's the process of getting your stuff to labels and distributors over here this far away?
Yeah, well, back in the day, it was really hard because it was very, you know, selling rock and roll to America or even to England was like selling ice to Eskimos, you know, from Australia. You know, because I guess the good thing was we grew up on radio from both continents, you know, from England and from, because we're a part of the Commonwealth with England.
Sure.
But we heard all the American stuff. So we sort of went into a blender in Australia to try to develop our own style. I mean, Australia was already very rock-based with bands like AC/DC being so uncompromising back in the 70s. They were going to be rock and roll, and that is that. And, boy, did they do such a good job of that. By the early 80s, there'd been very few Australian artists who'd made it. There was Little River Band who were, you know, sort of more like the Eagles or something. They weren't anything about new music. Men at Work kind of were a Melbourne band that broke over there huge, which was pretty amazing. And In our case, it was actually an accident. There was the famous K-Rock in LA. A radio programmer from K-Rock was actually in Australia because an Australian radio station wanted to sound more like K-Rock because K-Rock was fantastic. So a guy called Rick Carroll came out to Australia, to Sydney, and at the time Send Me an Angel was, you know, doing very well on the charts. It had just come out. And Rick Carroll loved it. And he said, well, I'm taking this back to America. So it had nothing to do with our management, our record company. This one guy loved the song, took it to K-Rock and started flogging it before we even had a record contract.
Wow.
So that was like pure accident, happy accident for us. But then the Australian bands started to become more confident. It goes across the arts in Australia, whether it's literature, filmmaking, music or art. We had what we call a cultural cringe, that we didn't think we were as good as anything that was English or American. And it took us a long time to get over that. You know, our movies started coming out, Mad Max started taking on the world, and more music came out of Australia. So people started to think, okay, if it comes out of Australia, it's probably going to be really good. And don't worry about it. Stop the cringe. Stop feeling so inferior. Just do what you do, and we know it's good, and it'll be accepted.
I love that.
A long time.
You want to talk about how Richard placed the ad and looking for the guitar player and how the friendship was born, kind of how real life got started? Or I guess I should say, were y'all the Wires then, right? Is that how it
started? Yeah, we were the Wires. Yeah, well, you've done your research. That's nice.
Oh, dude. So we love this stuff.
Yeah, it was early one Saturday morning. I'd been up all night doing something. I don't know what I'd been doing. It certainly wasn't partying. But a young friend of mine was, you know, banging loudly on my door, and there was a paper called The Age newspaper that was had a music column in it, you know, for, you know, bands wanted things. And this guy, Nicky, is banging on my door, and he said, David, there's this ad in the paper. A keyboard player is looking for a guitar player to form a band with. You have to ring this number. You have to ring this number. He was so adamant about it. And I thought, oh, yeah, okay, Nick. And I went back to bed and got up and kind of rang the number and had a brief conversation with Richard somewhere. And then Richard had gone, was leaving his house after the phone call, but he wrote a note on his fridge for his flatmate to say, I've found the guitar player. So from one conversation, Richard seemed to think that I was the person that was, you know, going to be the right one for the band. So, you know, we got together and we were not going to form a band. We were just going to try to write songs. He had a synthesizer, I had a guitar. And eventually we decided, it's pretty exciting going out and seeing all those bands. We've got some songs now. Why don't we do it as well? So we found a bass player. And we went out with a drum machine.
Dude, that's awesome. Huh. That's so cool. That's great. So there's parts of these where we just kind of gush over things that we love about the artist that we're hanging out with. So hang tight, and I'm just going to kind of rapid fire a few things that I really like. Not just off of Heartland. I love the Heartland album. Catch Me If I'm Falling is the other single. In the video, y'all are in all white. Quick question, I'll tie in. What kind of guitar are you playing there? It's like the V-shaped one. I don't know what that is. That's a great-looking guitar for that video, but I don't know what kind of guitar that is.
Yeah, that was actually a Roland synthesizer guitar.
Okay, and all right. Well, that's cool.
That was the first time it was used. It was supposed to be, it was hooked up to, there was a floor pedal thing that was actually a JX3P sound module.
Okay.
So you basically were playing a JX3P from this, you know, crazy looking guitar. Mm-hmm. But the latency was so terrible. You know, you'd play the note and you could go and get a cup of coffee and the note would finally sound, and it was crap. It was horrible. It was in the video, but it was not on anything.
Okay.
And I walked into a music shop in LA one day, and the sales guy comes up to me and goes, "You're the guy from Real Life." And I went, yeah, I am. Wow, I've been recognized. Fabulous. And he goes, you bastard. I bought that guitar that you used in that video clip. And it's crap.
That's awesome.
And I went, I know. I never used it.
That's great. Oh, I love that story so much. Because, yeah, in Open Hearted, which sounds like, to me, Send Me an Angel Part 2, or it sounds like it could be part of the same band at least. Like, it's very similar. Yeah. You're playing a gorgeous blue Strat, and I was like, that's the guitar I hear, but you're playing that weird. That's why it was confusing to me. So that was
It is the blue Strat on the record.
Oh,
it was
great.
It was a model called the Strat, and it had a blue headstock as well.
Yeah.
But that is the guitar that was
gorgeous
on the record.
I love that thing. And I was – funny story. So that song is in, apparently, Voyage of the Rock Aliens with Pia Zadora. You know that movie, Voyage of the Rock Aliens?
Yeah.
So I don't know that. Yeah. I don't know that movie, but I'm playing this song, and this guy's like, oh, yeah, that's from Voyage of the Rock Aliens in my office. I was like, what is that? I didn't even know that was a movie.
Oh yeah, it's Pia Zadora.
Pia Zadora, yeah, that's crazy. Yeah.
But when you're quoting these movies, they're all mostly pretty bad movies. And I've got to say, I've never seen any of them. So
what? You know, okay, so you haven't seen The Wizard or Rad, because those are like
80s. No, I haven't seen The Wizard. I've seen the scene from Rad, and I kind of
on the bicycle
cringe a little bit. Yes. Yeah. And I go, oh, God. But there was also Teen Wolf 2.
Yeah, Teen Wolf 2. Oh,
and
yeah.
And I happened to be
Jason Bateman, not Michael J. Fox, right?
That's right. And I happened to be living in Hollywood at the time, and the record company guys rang up and went, "No, David, there's a big premiere on tonight on Hollywood Boulevard. There's a movie, your song's in it." And I'm, you know, a little boy guy from Australia, you know, I'm going, wow, fabulous. So I invited a beautiful girl and I said, hey, I didn't tell her why. I said, we're going to see a movie tonight on Hollywood Boulevard at some famous theater. And we walked down the red carpet and the movie started and I thought, oh, God, this is not so great, is it? You know? and the girl wasn't that impressed either. And all of a sudden there's this vicious fight scene and Sammy and Angel comes on and I just went, oh, no, and I just sank down in my seat. I'd completely forgotten that was coming up.
So, yeah. That's awesome.
Not well, as though, yeah.
That's great. Well, other things like that went from there. Your second album, Flame, you went with a different producer. You went with Peter Henderson, completely different than the Steve Hillage and Ross Cockle sound, with Face to Face as the lead single. I love the isolated guitar part about minute 229, but One Blind Love is my favorite track on this album. So good stuff. I've also listened to Lifetime, listened through that, and the Happy Album 4 and Imperfection 5. I listened, like, it's good stuff, man. So I would tell all our listeners out there, if you get a chance, if you're going to pick up a second one, I would pick up Flame after Heartland. That would be the one that I would suggest. But those are some of my faves.
What about Sirens?
Sirens. Okay, that's the newest one. Yeah, so that's the newest one. I haven't had a chance to listen all the way through it yet, so I will let you, if I'm going to pick up one track, where should I start?
My Beautiful Monster.
Okay.
There you go.
And tying in with Teen
Wolf 2. I'm calling it a progtronic album.
Okay. That's
so it's actually, I've got CDs, but it's also on vinyl. I wanted to make an old-fashioned record where there's a bit of a concept. So side one is basically, well, there's five parts, but it's a storyline about the sirens. You know, the sirens sing, you crash your boat, you die, etc. So I wanted to do something that was, a bit concept-y. So, yes, Sirens goes to one side, then there's five tracks. It's kind of like Low by David Bowie something. So I thought, no one buys records anymore, so I'll make one and I'll do whatever I feel like.
Dude, we are album guys. We are listening through. We will take it from track one to track 42 or however many you have on there.
Who's listened to our show for any amount of time has heard us lament the loss of album culture. So we are all about, especially concept records, all that. We love it.
Well, it's got the double fold cover. There's all the lyrics. There's funny things on the back. There's interesting. There's lots of jokes on here because I can. And there's lots of lots of little lies and things. And it should be a great read. You know, there's a whole lot of. It's based on the Legend of the Sirens, but I'm having a big tongue in cheek laugh throughout all of this. So
great.
We're trying to find the actual cover. It's all over Spotify and everything. So.
Yeah, great. Speaking of covers, actually, who has done your favorite cover of "Send Me an Angel" of all the bands or all the whether it's online or even somebody you've heard live or like
Flock
the one
of Seagulls.
That's Flock of Seagulls sending you stuff from resorts around the world. Who's done your favorite cover of "Send Me an Angel"?
That's a hard because there's so many. I mean, they're really, really awesome. I mean, there was one, okay, there's a dance one that, was a club hit. It was Star City versus Real Life. It was a German one where they changed it from a minor key to a major key.
Oh.
And it worked. It was my vocal on it. It was not the original vocal, my vocal. And just had this sort of early 2000s kind of club feel about it that I actually just love for some reason. I thought, oh, this is so beautiful. It really is. Other versions, I mean, there's death metal versions, there's rockabilly versions. but there was a TV show in Australia called Underbelly and Underbelly Razor. And it's about Sydney during the years of the Great Depression, just after the First World War, where a lot of men who'd been in the First World War came back and they had no jobs They turned to crime. The Sydney Harbour Bridge was just being built, and there were two women, one who ran a brothel and the other one who ran a bar. Both were illegal. They were both arch enemies. And it's this is actually a true story. It's all based on actual facts. It's an amazing story. But at the very end of it, there's a singer singing a 1930s version of Send Me an Angel in a Nightclub, and it's just beautiful.
Oh, wow.
It's like all the songs throughout the soundtrack of this movie that's set in the late 20s, early 30s are from the 80s, and the very last song in the show is this. In the lady who ran the bar, there's a broken down singer starting to sing Send Me an Angel. Then it flashes to this modern club who her rival was running and is singing a beautiful, you know, like Cab Calloway version of Send Me an Angel.
Oh, that's fantastic. Very cool.
You triggered something in there that I was not planned to talk about, but it triggered something. So that took me back to, I was trying to think of the first time I actually saw like you guys playing something, doing your first, long story short, let me get through this. I've kind of mumbled all over myself. So I discovered you through the Wizard movie from 89. I've talked about it. It's the Fred Savage movie, whatnot. It's not one that you've seen or super proud of, but I love the movie. So then I looked you guys up on like some old VHS tapes. I found one of American Bandstand from 84 and you're on there with, and I completely forgot I had this. I just picked up a box of American Bandstand cards. So I've got a Dick Clark card in here. I was hoping to, I need to look through this and see if I've got a real life card. That would be amazing because you had the best mullet of 84. That was like, you
thank
got
you.
Mullet of the year that year. And you're playing
thank
that
you.
Gorgeous sunburst Strat. I still remember that Strat. As, and I know I'm a gear nut and have talked a lot about it, but that triggered something that I completely forgot I had this box here when you said that. So 84, talk about 84 American Bandstand.
Sorry, speaking of that sunburst Strat, it's now black and in pieces.
What? I'm restoring that, it. That's the guitar?
That's the one.
Oh, my goodness.
But it's now, I had a Floyd Rose, I had it painted black, and then I had a Floyd Rose put on it, and I'm sick to death of Floyd Roses.
Uh-huh.
And so I'm kind of ripping it apart. And I'm waiting on pieces, but the postage is really slow at the moment with COVID. But that's the guitar.
That doesn't even look like the same guitar. Like, it's so completely different now.
It is. That's well, awesome. it's very, very old now. Because I bought it, you know, that time we're on Dick Clark. I just bought it over there. We'd been over there for months and months. We're on the Eurythmics tour with Berlin. And
dude, that's so cool.
You know, so, but that's the guitar.
That's crazy. It's that came one. Full circle. After nice we're moment. Done, after we hang up, I'm going to look through and see if I have a real life American Bandstand card in here. That would be amazing. One thing that we ask everybody, and then we'll let you enjoy your time. You've been great, David. Thank you so much. Hope you've had fun. So you're on tour either by yourself, with real life, whoever. You're on tour and you go into a gas station. What is your gas station snack food of choice? And while you're thinking of that, I'll tell you mine. I get a Three Musketeers bar. When I was growing up, my mom would say you could have any candy bar you want, and that's the most ounces. So I would get a Three Musketeers bar. What is your gas station snack food of choice?
Well, I was so disappointed doing a big tour of America in 2019 that they don't make the little – I hate Starbucks, but they have a little can of espresso, a little black can of Starbucks espresso. You can't get it anymore. So I was really disappointed. You know, I mean, I only went to America to get that Starbucks. They don't have it. They don't have it at Starbucks in Australia. And I've looked all over the world for that. I love it. I hate Starbucks, but I love that little can of their coffee. They didn't have it. So other than that, I'm probably going to get a bag of chips or something.
Okay.
Well, not chocolate.
Well, I have a mission now. I worked at Starbucks for 4 months a long, long time ago. So I'm going to call my one connection and say, hey, I got a buddy in Australia that needs some of these. I'll trade it for a Siren CD autographed, made out to JP, and we'll see what we can do.
Please do.
David, this has been fun, man. You're a rock star. This has been great. Anything you want to tell the people?
Yeah, anything upcoming other than Sirens? Is there anything on the horizon that you want to talk about? I know you're still stuck in Melbourne for a while.
You know, I'm one of those people that's going to tour till I drop, you know, because this is all I do. This has been my life story. I never imagined that, you know, 40 years later, I'd still be doing the same thing. So I'm very privileged that I can go, you know, practically anywhere in the world, and people are happy to see me, which is very nice. So I'm just going to keep plugging away, you know, making music, playing live shows. My passion is to play live. I mean, that's the thing that I love most out of anything is playing live. So doing anything I can to play live as much as I can until I drop off the perch.
Well, if you're ever around the Nashville, Tennessee area, which is where we are, we will make sure to come check out your show.
I have a very dear friend in Nashville. That's Rick Olson from Berlin, who was the original guitar player from Berlin. He used to work at we call him our fifth Beatle because whenever we're around, he gets on the stage, takes my guitar and plays everything the way I should have played it, the bastard.
We'll have you connect us with him over here.
He used to work at Gibson Guitars, but I think he's involved with the Glen Campbell Museum now or something.
Okay, cool.
I mean, we actually played the Gibson Cafe there in 1998, and Rick had organized that for us. So we were over there. We stayed in Nashville for a few days, went to his place for a party. He's got a lovely family, lovely guy. And now I think he's perhaps because the Glen Campbell Museum's only opened in the last couple of years, I think, hasn't it? So, but I think he's there. But anyway, I love Nashville.
Thanks so much.
Man,
it's been a delightful
great.
Chat.
And thanks for the welcome, thanks guys. For thanks for hanging out. We'll do it again.
It's great having a Melbourne morning and talking to a couple of guys in Nashville. It couldn't have made the day a little day better. Thanks, guys. Well, take care.
Hope you had fun, man. Talk to you soon.
See ya.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
That was David Sterry.
That was David Sterry.
Of real life.
Oh, man, so much fun. And we know you guys were dying to know which game we played.
Yes.
To come back in. So we chose Mike Tyson's Punch-Out, whoever could knock out Glass Joe the fastest. And I finally won something.
You did.
To get back there. Karate Kid and Mike Tyson, I guess fighting games.
Took me two rounds to knock out Glass Joe. Come on. Come on.
It's all right.
Almost took me three, right? 209.
209 in the second.
Man. And you did it 252 in the first?
Something like that, yeah. So
crazy.
Good stuff. Little Mac came to play.
Yeah, that's right. I love. Even the, did you ever play the Super Nintendo version, Super Punch-Out? It's just as good.
Yeah.
It's equally fun. They kept the same feel. It just has this feel that feels like no other game I've ever played, Punch-Out. It's like the timing of it is just perfect and right. It's magical.
Well, for those of you guys that just joined us on this episode, we're not normally as video game heavy.
Yeah.
We are a music podcast where we discuss music. Hopefully you got some nuggets of musical goodness that you enjoyed.
Although this was fun. I got to say, the great idea on the break gaming. We might have to take advantage of that more often. I'm trying to think this whole time if there are other movies centered around video games.
Video games. I guess we could Google it.
What's the fun of having the whole universe in front of you?
Let us know if we've missed a really good video game. Oh, Ready Player One?
Okay, sure.
That one's... my wife loves that movie.
I was trying to think about like older games, but yeah.
I don't know
totally.
Any other... Is there any other like
I'm sure there
arcade
are, like, Tron,
games? Tron?
Right?
Yeah,
that's video... They made a video game out of it, but it's not a video game in the movie, is it? It's a thing. It's like a sci-fi thing. I don't know. Interesting. Let us know. What's your favorite video game movie if we haven't mentioned it?
What's the worst video game? I think we'd said, Journey? Or E.T. From
Atari. E.T. from Atari.
E.T. from Atari.
Yes, notably awful. There's others. I super
hate. Have you seen Stone Cold E.T.?
Yes.
Dude,
I just saw it this week
again.
So
funny. So That's funny. Really, that guy.
Stone Cold E.T. Yes. As a matter of fact, I'm going to do that. On my way home, I'm going to just stop and see if I can... I mean, I don't have an E.T. mask.
I'm just going to do the voice.
I'm just going to, with my face, but say I'm Stone Cold E.T.
That's funny.
Okay. All right. Yeah, I think the original Ninja Turtles game for NES, not the one that was like the arcade game, but the one that was like an overhead view, and you went down in the sewers. I mean, that's probably all of them, but like, it was awful. Man, oh, it was so bad. That was atrocious. That's probably my least favorite regular Nintendo game. Although Goonies 2 was really bad too.
I don't remember that one.
It was supposed to be like a sequel to the Goonies movie, but set in a video game.
Okay.
And it was trash, dude. Trash. Couldn't save it. There was no swearing in it. The kids didn't curse. What good is that?
No truffle shuffle.
Yeah, no truffle shuffle at all. No, there was no truffles being shuffled. So what am I supposed to do with that? All right. Kids, movie month continues next week. Movie month concludes next week.
We realize there's 5 weeks in March. We know math.
But we got other stuff to do.
But we've got something special the very last week of March.
Yeah, we do.
And it's good. So you guys are going to love the way we conclude movie month.
Absolutely.
Special guest coming back in. Friend, family of the show.
Yes.
So just hang around. You guys are going to like it.
That's right. We'll see y'all next week with another great song. Until then, I'm Rob.
I am JP.
Go listen to some music.